As was mentioned, my name is Jennifer Obadia, and I wear two hats. I'm adjunct faculty over at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy in Boston, and I also work with an organization called Healthcare Without Harm. I have nothing to disclose. So Healthcare Without Harm is actually a global environmental health organization, and we really work to leverage the power of the healthcare sector to create positive changes for environmental and public health. And we work in these six different program areas that you see listed here, but I work in the Healthy Food and Healthcare Program, which focuses on the ways that hospitals and the health and healthcare facilities more broadly can influence positive change in our food system. So you can see listed here the three different areas that we, or the three different ways in which we work with hospital food systems. Most of our work is focused around procurement. We do a bit of work with clinician advocates, physician advocates, and increasingly we're starting to work in the realm of community benefits with nonprofit hospitals and looking at ways that they can support healthier community food environments. And so that's what I'll be talking about with you today. So we, with funding support from a group called the Mass Convergence Partnership, undertook a project to look at the ways that hospitals, specifically in the state of Massachusetts, use their community benefits to support community food environments. So the first and main goal was really to just sort of conduct that landscape assessment to see what was, how they were conceiving of the relationship between the food environment and diet-related disease, what types of programs they were implementing and how that aligned with their community benefit goals, and then lastly to look at how they are actually assessing impact of those programs. Not sure if folks need a little bit of background on community benefits or how familiar people are, so I'll just, how familiar are folks with community benefits? I got two thumbs up. So I'll just give you a brief overview, which is to say that they're actually not something new. The community benefit standard has been around in the IRS tax code since 1969. But with the changes in the Affordable Care Act, we got some significant change to some of the language in the regulation. And actually, this new language that says that encourages hospitals to look at how to prevent illness, to ensure adequate nutrition, and to address social, environmental, and behavioral factors that influence health in the community. That's part of new regulations that just came out in December of 2014. So they're not quite a year old. And that's where, especially in the food world, the fact that we got those three words, ensure adequate nutrition, in there has created a lot of excitement and some confusion. Really briefly, the process of undergoing or complying with the community benefit process. Every 3 years, hospitals conduct community health needs assessments. They first, of course, need to define their community, and there's a lot of leeway in the regulations as to how a community is defined. They look at both secondary and primary data, so that is required to actually solicit input from the community and do some primary data collection. And then, of course, they need to identify what are the primary health challenges and how they'll address them. And if they're not going to address them, why not? And then they do come up with their health need their community health implementation plans, or their CHIPs, and they do annual reporting, which is required by the IRS. So in the realm of food and nutrition work, we've seen this as an exciting opportunity to help facilities look a little bit further upstream and move beyond that sort of standard relationship, looking at how do we do that direct individual nutrition counseling to address diet-related disease, and how do we look at the environment in which people are living and how that influences what they can access and what they eat. So for this project, we looked at all the 2013 fiscal year reports that were submitted by nonprofit hospitals in the state. We conducted interviews with 11 facilities, and for those interview facilities, We looked at their most recent health needs assessment as well, so that allowed us to get a sense of what were the questions that they were asking to arrive at the primary health challenges that they were going to address. We also spoke with our Attorney General's office because we have some additional guidance at the state level beyond what's offered through the federal government. And then, of course, we did conduct a literature review to look at the relationships between food access, diet, and disease. So really, I'm going to share with you sort of three steps. One, looking at the community health needs assessment and the way that food and food access were incorporated there. Second, looking at the actual programs that were implemented, and then finally looking at how the programs were being evaluated. So that first part where we were looking at the health needs assessments, we were really curious, you know, facilities are creating plans to address the challenges that are that come to the top of the needs list in their community. And of course, if they're not looking for something, they're not going to identify it as a need. So we were really interested to see when they were conducting their health needs assessment, were they asking about food security? Were they asking about diet? Were they asking about access more broadly? And so you can see here this list, this table lists the 11 facilities that we interviewed and the different variables that we looked at related to community food access. And you can see there's only one, which was Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, that actually looked at all four of those variables, and there are a couple that didn't look at any. So you can see it's really variable the ways that facilities are looking at this question, if at all. So what we've recommended to facilities are some national level data sets. The first two, the Food Environment Atlas and the Food Access Research Atlas, are provided through the USDA. They're very easy to search. They can be searched by zip codes or at the census block group level. So they can really look at information for their individual communities. And then also Map the Meal Gap, which is a data set that's provided by Feeding America, which is an umbrella organization for all the food banks in the country. And then we also did provide recommendations around how to incorporate this line of questioning and investigation into food access in their primary data collection. Our report in the appendix, we include some recommended questions to integrate into surveys, and then we also do recommend that they integrate these questions about food access into focus groups and key informant interviews. So what was actually already going on, and I think that it is interesting to note that for some of the facilities that didn't ask any of those questions or look at food access really in any way, they were still implementing programs that that their key focus was to increase access to healthy food. So I thought that that was interesting. And we found, you know, well over 70 different programs that were being implemented across the state of Massachusetts. And this is from the review of all of the fiscal 2013 reports that were submitted. And we broke them out into these different categories. So direct food access, which was most common, were included activities like providing food for homeless shelters or hosting senior meals on site at a facility cafeteria, ways where folks, where the facility was actually providing the direct food backpack programs for schools, things along those lines. Education included programming like the use of Cooking Matters and Shopping Matters curriculum, as well as direct nutrition counseling and things along those lines. Community food environment was activities like supporting a mobile market or a farmer's market, healthy retail initiatives, things like that that altered the broader food environment. These integrated diet and exercise programs were much more clinically based, so they had heavy involvement by physicians where they were working with partners like a YMCA to provide access free of charge to a place where youth in particular, these mostly were geared at, could participate in physical activity, and they were complementing that with things like cooking classes or nutrition education classes, things along those lines. And then lastly, which I thought was interesting, only five facilities reported actual direct grant making where that was the main focal point of the relationship, where they weren't really heavily involved in other components of the program implementation. So that's what we were seeing across the state. And I just wanted to give you a couple of examples of some specific programs. So we have Fairview Hospital, which is out in western Massachusetts, a very small rural community, and they actually do provide food to the local homeless shelter there 3 times a week. And they sort of are accomplishing multiple goals here because they use food that has been prepared but not served in their cafeteria, and they provide that to the shelter. So they're addressing both their food waste as well as providing food for those who need it. Holy Family Hospital is implementing a fruit and vegetable prescription program. So in this case, physicians are referring patients that are either diabetic or have had a major cardiac event, have some sort of diet-related ailment into the program, and they receive $1 per day per member of household for purchase of fresh fruits and vegetables. So a single person would get $7 a week, a family of four would get $28 a week. So it's a pretty resource-intensive program. St. Elizabeth's Medical Center, I thought this was a really interesting program. So they do home delivery of medically tailored meals for 30 days after a major cardiac event. It includes 3 meals and a snack delivered every evening for 30 days. It also includes a visit from the nutritionist. So as many of you might be familiar, after someone has a heart attack, usually a nutritionist will come and talk to them while they're still in the hospital environment and tell them about all the changes they should make to their diet. And having a father who has now had 3 heart attacks, he sits there and he goes, and he's not able to digest it. So this nutritionist comes to the home and is sharing a lot of that same information, but doing it in a much more comfortable environment and at a time where people are better able to receive that information. I will note that this program is no longer operational, and it stopped because of challenges with distribution. So some infrastructure challenges there. And the last example that I'll share is from UMass Memorial Hospital, which is in Worcester, which is a lower income urban area in Massachusetts. And they have right across the street from the main campus a public housing development. And so they started doing some nutrition education with residents there. And the residents said, "This is great. How am I supposed to get any of this food?" And so they worked with them to create an on-site garden. And then when there were more residents that were interested than they had physical space on site for, they created 2 more community gardens in pocket parks that were nearby. And they've also partnered with a mobile market to make sure that they now stop at the different housing development sites to increase access through that. And they also are trying to work to address employment issues in their city. And so they've created 5 summer jobs for the last, 3 years at this point, to employ youth through these garden programs. So when we work with the facilities, we're really, and this might look familiar to some, it's an adaptation of the health improvement pyramid from the CDC. We sort of adapted it to focus specifically on food access, and we're really trying to encourage facilities to think a bit further upstream, so to those tier 2 and tier 1 type of interventions that can have a broader impact and with a lower both burden on the individual as well as more cost-effective for the facility. So the last piece that I'll talk about is with regards to evaluation, and I'll say that this was a spot where everyone I spoke to faced some challenges. And if you look here, it lists the hospitals, the type of program based on that those different categories, and the types of metrics that were being evaluated. And for a lot of the programs, they were really only able to capture metrics like amount of food delivered, number of individuals served, but they weren't able to get at the health outcomes. And it was really only those integrated diet and exercise programs that were high touch with a physician that were really able to get at more of those measures like BMI, A1C, things along those lines. So this is, I think, an area where there's a lot of work that needs to be done. What we are recommending to facilities is a lot around coordination and working together, both in terms of that one example that I gave of the facility that's doing the fruit and vegetable prescriptions. They're actually part of a health system where 8 other facilities are implementing the same program. But they're not coordinated in terms of what are the metrics that they're collecting. So how can they work better to both collect, look at the same indicators, and to be better sharing that information? So that's something that we're really encouraging facilities to look at as far as being able to start to build a stronger evidence base through the implementation of these programs. And then also how can we engage in some more community-based participatory research to really incorporate the community voice to better understand the impact that these programs are having. So that's where we are in the research to date. I will share that we just in September received a grant from Robert Wood Johnson where we'll be replicating this research at the national level, so looking across all 50 states to get a better sense of the ways that facilities are using their community benefit resources to support the food environment. And that should get started in January, and then from there we'll be looking to develop a toolkit to start to be able to provide facilities with more resources to implement this type of work. That is it for me. Thank you so much, and I will turn it back over.